Stories from a Hard Place is an anthology podcast. Every Thursday, R.A. Jacobson presents another story from a hard place, read by the author. Stories of loneliness and betrayal, of false hope and shattered dreams, of gifts and regrets, of love and accidental kindness. Each story follows a separate path that leads to the realization that sometimes the only solution is a lead pill. Listener discretion is advised. Contains strong language, violence, and some adult situations. Episode Haymaker. This is part one of a two-part telling. The blow came out of nowhere. A massive strike to the head, bone deep. He felt it all the way through his skull to the other side. Like a piece of earth had come up and slammed into his jaw. It rattled his brain and shook his eyes. He saw stars. His teeth ground against each other. He couldn't see, couldn't think. Everything stopped in a flash of blinding white. He stepped back a couple of paces, arms windmilling. He righted himself, tasted iron. He felt the warmth under his nose. He wiped the back of his hand across his upper lip and wasn't surprised to see blood. He bent forward, crouched and ready. His fists balled, his legs braced. He lunged, swinging a huge, wide punch aimed to end the fight. He missed. Jacob pulled back just enough, jabbed, catching Brian straight in the face. Brian heard and felt his nose crunch. A sickening sound that he'd heard once before at Jacob's fist. His eyes watered, blinding him for a second. Every year it was the same thing. Brian and Jacob were the best friends until they weren't. A boiling point would be reached, and the release was their annual fight, one Brian inevitably lost. After the fight, in a week or so, they'd be friends again till next year. This year was different. This year Jacob had done something so incredibly stupid, Brian couldn't leave it be. Jacob's decision was not only stupid, it scared Brian. Brian wouldn't admit it now, but he loved Jacob, and what Jacob had done changed everything. It changed who Brian saw Jacob as. It made Jacob not the man he thought he was. It was fucking stupid. To sell your soul to the judge was beyond stupid, beyond anything like stupid. And for what? A truck? A truck, for fuck's sake. Brian swung again, another wild haymaker. This time Jacob stood his ground. Brian's fist collided with Jacob's hard head. There was a loud crunch. Brian yelped, grabbing his hand. Jacob smiled, looking at Brian, whose face had gone white. "Are we done?" Jacob asked. Brian bent over his hand, clutching it against his stomach, moaning. "Yeah, we're done." Jacob turned and walked away. The gathered crowd groaned, hoping for an epic beatdown. This was just sad. Brian sank to his knees, his pale forehead touching the grass. He was sure he had broken his hand. He stayed that way for several minutes. When he sat back on his heels, he was alone in the field. Slowly he stood and went to the nurse's station. There would be hell to pay for fighting on school grounds, but he needed someone to look at his hand. He was right. The principal yelled, and Brian waited. Finally, after it was obvious that Brian wasn't going to tell him who he'd been fighting with, the principal left. An hour later, he was back in class, with a soft cast halfway up his forearm. He hadn't broken anything, just severely bruised it. But he had a story to tell. For the rest of the afternoon, he laughed and told anybody who would listen about the fight. After school, Jacob walked up to Brian, sitting on the school's front step waiting for the bus that would take him home. "How's your hand?" Jacob asked, sitting down on the step beside Brian. "Oh, it's fine. You got one fucking hard head." "Yeah, I've been told that afore," he laughed. "Sides, my deal makes it a bit harder." "Your deal, huh?" Brian frowned. "Give me a ride home." "Yeah, sure, come on." They stood and walked to the parking lot. Jacob's brand new 1977 Chevy half-ton, Clyde, was there shining in the afternoon sun. "That's a fine truck," Brian said. Then he noticed a sizable dent in Clyde's front fender. "Hey, what the fuck? There's a dent in your fender. Somebody hit you."
"Yeah, you did," Jacob chuckled.
"The hell I did," Brian said. "I never touched Clyde."
"No, but that last punch landed hard."
"I don't get it."
"I don't get it." Brian looked at the fist-sized dent in Clyde's front fender. "It's part of my deal. I get hit, and Clyde here takes the damage for me. It's great."
"What the fuck?" Brian said.
"Ah, the best part. Clyde here heals. That dent will be gone by morn," Jacob smiled.
Brian looked at Jacob, then back to Clyde.
"Okay, that's fucked up," he said, shaking his head.
He walked around the truck and pulled open the passenger door.
"It's a beautiful truck," Brian said, sliding in on the black bench seat.
Jacob climbed in and started the truck up.
"So it's a magic truck."
"I'm no magic truck," Clyde said in Jacob's head.
Jacob smiled, knowing Brian couldn't hear Clyde.
"No, he's not a magic truck. He's a demon inside a Chevy C10.
"A demon?" Brian said.
"Yeah, I can hear him in my head."
Brian looked at Jacob, scowling.
"Scared the shit out of me when I first heard him," Jacob said.
After a second, they pulled out in the parking lot. Brian asked, "So what does Mary Lou say about all this?"
"She hasn't seen Clyde yet," Jacob frowned. "She knows about the truck, but I don't know. She's acting kind of weird lately."
"She knows how you got Clyde?" Brian asked.
"Yeah, I told her."
"Maybe that's why she's acting weird. Maybe she thinks it's a fucking stupid thing to have done."
Jacob was quiet for a while.
"Maybe, but I don't think so.
She asked a lot of questions, but I don't know. Like I said, she's acting kind of weird.
Who the fuck knows?"
They drove for a time in silence.
"Yeah, I might be stupid, but it's done," Jacob said.
Jacob dropped Brian off at the end of Brian's lane and drove home. In Clyde's rear view, he could see Brian walking toward his house. Brian was worried. When Jacob started talking about Mary Lou, graduation, and his plans, Brian thought he was joking, but Jacob kept bringing it up. The whole idea of going to the crossroads and making a deal for a new truck to take Mary Lou to the prom was just dumb as fuck. Brian told him so. They laughed about it, but then Jacob brought it up again. Brian started to worry that Jacob was serious. Brian told Jacob it was a stupid idea, and he was being a fucking idiot. They had words. Then Jacob went quiet, which wasn't a good sign. He could be as stubborn as a mule. Afterwards, Jacob stopped talking about it. Brian didn't see Jacob for a couple of days. He was nowhere to be found, but it felt like he was avoiding him. This morning, Brian had heard the commotion. He had known even before he was told, the school was buzzing about Jacob and his deal.
Fuck.
Brian marched around the school till he found Jacob and shoved him.
"So you just had to fucking go and do it."
Words flew, and the next thing they were outside fighting. Now, as Brian walked to his home, he couldn't think of what this would mean for his friend. Brian knew very little about the judge and his deals. Everyone had heard of him, of course, but few really wanted to talk about it, and even fewer talked about their deal. Brian hadn't told his folks about Jacob, nor would he. It would get back to Jacob's folks. That wouldn't be pretty. So he stewed, knowing there was nothing he could do about it. 3 days later was the grad dance. Brian went to it, but didn't see Jacob or Mary Lou there. He looked around for them, but assumed they blew it off and were driving around in Clyde. Maybe not driving. He had had a great time. He would never admit it, but he enjoyed dancing. He rarely got the chance to, weddings and the occasional dance at the hall, but they were few and far between. It wasn't till the next morning when he heard what had happened. The phone rang. It was a party line, so everyone listened to hear their code. 2 longs, 1 short was a Jacob's family ring. It rang twice before it was answered. After a few minutes, there was a single ding indicating the phone line was free.
The phone rang, one short, one long, one short. That was Brian's family ring. Brian's ma picked up the phone.
Yes, she said, after a pause.
Brian, it's for you. She held out the receiver. There was worry in her face. Brian stood and took the receiver.
Yes?
It was Jacob's dad looking for his son. There was tension in his voice.
Nah, I didn't see him.
Brian said, then stopped when the phone went dead. He hung up the phone and looked at his folks, confused. Over the next hour, the story came out. Jake run Mary Lou over on the way to pick her up for the dance. She had died, and he was in jail waiting on an investigation. Brian couldn't believe it. It seemed like something out of a movie. He listened to his folks talk, trying to figure out what actually happened. Different stories were told around town. Some were sure Jacob was guilty, maybe drinking, maybe just careless. Others thought it was a tragic accident. After a couple of days, Jacob was released. Brian waited for Jacob to come over, but when he didn't, he went to see him. His ma said he wasn't home. She looked worried, but didn't say anything more. Brian suspected he was just upstairs sleeping. Frustrated, he drove back home. He found out later Jacob was spending most of his nights at the crossroads drinking, waiting for the judge to show. He had a gun with him. A couple months later, Brian's folks were out of town visiting his aunt, so he was having a party. Brian was surprised and happy to see Jacob walk up. He looked like hell, but after a few awkward moments, it felt like old times. They sat on bales around a fire and laughed a bit. Brian started to talk to a new girl, Anne. When he looked up, Jacob was gone. The next time Brian saw Jacob was at his father's funeral. He had passed the day after the party. Jacob was quiet, head down. Brian knew he had gone through a lot with Mary Lou's death and now his pa's passing. He tried to talk to him, but he was not very responsive, so Brian let him be. It was a Tuesday in mid-August. Brian was helping his dad service machinery, getting ready for harvest. The crops were looking good, better than good. His dad was happy, but watching the skies. For the last few weeks, he had hoped for rain, and it had come. Now he needed the rain to stay away and let the crops dry out, so he could get them off before the snow came. A couple years ago, the rain made the fields too wet to work. They managed to swath, but they couldn't get them off before the snow came. The crops stayed put over the winter. The mice loved it. They multiplied like crazy. The next spring, after the frost had left, it had dried out some. Brian and his dad had picked up the swaths. Some of it was still good for feed, but much of it was ruined. Too many mice. Too much mouse shit and piss. All those mice brought a surge of hawks, ospreys, and owls, which Brian had loved. Raptors had always been something he was fascinated by. Brian and his dad were prepping the baler. It was working fine, but a little time now could save hours later in the fields. A hawk sat on a post not 20 feet from Brian. He watched it as it regarded him, first with one eye, then the other. It was a magnificent sight. Brian leaned in to check the spinning forming belts. It was just a slip. His runner lost its perches on a metal surface. Just a small slip, but Brian's arms came up to stop his fall. He didn't feel it, and there was very little blood. He was suddenly laying on his back on the ground beside the baler, and something was wrong. From far away, he heard his dad screaming his name. He was shaking him. The hawk lifted off, all power and grace. Brian watched it until it was out of sight. He was in the truck, sitting in the middle, his dad holding him, his ma driving. She was driving fast. Brian was going to say something, make a joke about this truck not meant to go 70 on a gravel road. Couldn't seem to lift his head. Brian was standing on black sand at the edge of a slow river that moved like thick black oil. It was wide. He could just make out the other bank. And far beyond that stood what looked like silhouettes of jagged mountains. Above him, thousands of stars reflected on the river's surface and gave the black sand a shimmer.
It was neither cold nor warm. There was no wind.
This is weird, he said.
Very weird. I should go. He turned and started walking. After a while, he stopped when he realized there was no sound. He moved towards the river's edge. As he got closer, he could hear lapping. It was sluggish. As he watched the river, it seemed to reach for him. He stepped back, chuckled at his foolishness, and continued walking. It was impossible to know how long he'd walked when he saw something in the water in the distance. As he got closer, he could make out the shape of a large, shiny boat. It looked like one of those Viking ships he'd seen in books, or a very large Venice boat. What were they called? Gondola? As he came alongside, he realized it was far more massive than he had first thought. He looked for people on board, but saw no one. It seemed to be drifting on the current. He watched it for a time, aware of the strangeness of everything around him, but he felt oddly calm and unperturbed. Behind him, he saw stone steps going up. Why hadn't he seen them before? There were huge stone steps that jutted into the sand. He walked towards them and started climbing. The top of the stairs were lost in blackness, and after a while, the bottom was also consumed by dark. He was no longer able to see the river nor the mountains, not even the stars. All there was were these stairs. He kept climbing. When he opened his eyes, he couldn't make sense of what he was seeing. Squares, a grid of white. Everything was white. It was too bright. He squinted, trying to raise his hand to shield his eyes. He couldn't. Somehow, he couldn't raise his arm. He frowned. Then he was just too tired to think about it and slipped back into sleep. He became aware of voices. He wasn't awake, not completely, but he could hear hushed voices. He was very thirsty. He opened his eyes when he heard his mum's voice. I'm thirsty, he said. He was surprised how dry his throat was. He coughed. His mum touched his forehead. He could see her. Here you go. Just a sip, not too much. Her voice was soft, and there was sadness in her eyes. He sipped. It felt so good. What's up, Ma? Is Pa okay? Brian asked. Oh, it ain't nothing. Pa's just fine. Don't worry. You just go to sleep. You need your rest. Okay, Ma, I'm tired, Brian said. My hand is cold, Ma. As he fell back to sleep, he saw his Ma start to cry. The next time he woke, it was dark. There was something beeping close to him. He tried to sit up, but couldn't seem to push himself up. He looked around the room and was surprised to see that he was in the hospital. He strained to push himself upright, grunted, and failed. He looked at the ceiling for a minute. White ceiling tiles, of course that's what they were. His dad came into view. Pa, you okay? Brian asked. Yeah, son, I'm just fine. How you feeling? What's going on, Pa? Why am I here? Brian asked, trying and failing again to sit up. For the first time Brian could remember, he saw his Pa's eyes fill with tears. There was an accident, Brian. You got hurt, son. Ah, Pa, don't. I feel fine, Brian said. Then he looked down at himself. At first, he couldn't understand what he was seeing. It didn't make sense. He looked down, then looked into his Pa's eyes, then looked back at his body under the white sheet. It looked wrong. Where his right arm should be, there was nothing, and his left arm stopped at his elbow? Pa, what happened? I don't understand. What's happening? It's okay, son. You're alive. We'll figure this. It's going to be okay. What happened to my arms, Pa? What happened to my arms? Brian's voice rose, edging to panic. His Pa was pulled away, and two nurses were there holding Brian. One reached above him and did something he didn't see. He slid down into a sleep, darker and deeper than before. The next day he woke, Jacob was sitting there talking to his Ma. He stood when Brian opened his eyes. Brian noticed how thin Jacob had become. He looked skeletal, haggard, and drawn.
Warren? Jacob said. Brian looked at him. Jacob's bloodshot eyes burned under his ball cap. His eyes were ringed with dark and were deeply sunk.
Well, you look like shit, Brian said.
Jacob half grinned.
You look just as pretty as ever.
A month later, when Brian got out of the hospital, it was Jacob pushing his chair at breakneck speed down the hallway and out into the sun. At that moment, it didn't feel too bad. It might be okay. As soon as he got home, as soon as he entered where he felt safe, where everything was familiar, he knew it would never be okay again. He couldn't touch anything. He couldn't pick up anything. He couldn't feed himself. He couldn't clean himself when he had a shit. And for how long? How long could he live with his mom feeding and wiping him like a baby? How could he expect that of her? How could he expect that of himself? He couldn't do it. He couldn't do any of it. He just couldn't.
Ma, is Jacob still here? Brian asked.
Yeah, I think Pa's still bending his ear.
Did you know about Jacob?
What about Jacob? Brian asked.
That he's gone and made himself a deal with the judge?
His ma leaned on a hip, looking at him.
Well?
Yeah, I knew. We had got into a fight. Stopped talking for a bit.
Told him he was a stupid fucker, Brian said.
Watch your language, she looked at him.
Well, go talk to him now.
Okay, yeah, okay. Brian went to go outside. He stopped at the door. He couldn't open it. His mom came hurrying over and opened the door for him. He didn't look at her. Just walked down the steps and out into the yard.
Hey, Bri.
Your dad was just telling me his thoughts on my life choices, Jacob grinned.
Need to talk to you, Jacob, Brian said, looking at his dad.
His dad took the hint.
Nice talking to you, Jacob. Thanks for all your help with Brian here, he said.
No problem, Jacob said as Brian's dad walked away.
What's up, Bri?
I can't do this, Brian said. Jacob didn't respond.
I can't do any of it, none of it. I can't have my ma feeding me, wiping my ass.
And?
And I want you to help me.
Well, I ain't wiping your ass, Jacob said, smiling.
You know what I mean.
I need to see him. I need to see him tonight, Brian said.
You sure? You don't want to think about it for a couple of days?
Fuck no. I'm not waiting.
No deal goes the way you think.
I fucking don't care. I want my arms back.
All right. I'll come get you later.
Nope. I'm coming with you now. Ma and Pa are going to try to talk me out of it.
I'm not going to let them, Brian said.
Jacob shrugged. Okay, let's get going.
They walked over to Clyde. Jacob opened the door and boosted Brian in. They drove down the driveway. Jacob saw Brian's mom come out onto the porch in the rear view. They drove around most of the day, checking fields and talking. They talked about everything other than what Brian was planning to do. They talked about girls, about trucks, about farming. They retold stories about shit they did. They told each other lies, each knowing the lie, each laughing nonetheless. Around 12:45, Jacob pulled up at the crossroads. Jacob put Clyde into park.
Okay, what are you going to ask for? Jacob asked.
I'm going to ask for my arms back.
You sure?
Well, that's what I want.
I've been thinking.
I was wondering if you wanted to ask for something that protects you from this sort of thing happening again, Jacob said.
Brian looked at Jacob. You're selling your soul. Might as well get more than just your arms. If you're going to do it big.
Like you? Brian said.
Jacob scowled.
Yeah, well, do as I say, not as I fucking did.
Jacob checked his watch. He got out of the truck and walked around and opened the door. He helped Brian down from Clyde.
Don't think the judge will show if I'm here. This is something you're going to have to do on your own, Jacob said.
He climbed into Clyde.
I'll come back for you in an hour.
Good luck. Jacob drove off.
Brian stood in the middle of the crossroads and waited. The air was cool. He looked around. He could see Clyde's taillights fading in the distance. Far off to the south, a yard light marked a farmyard, probably the Petersons' place. He looked up at the dark sky. It was filled with stars.
They reminded him of the stars that glinted off that black river. Suddenly, he was surrounded by a bright, inescapable light. The car roared to a stop inches from Brian's legs. After a second, the engine shut down, and the lights went out. As his eyes adjusted, he saw a tall man in a fine suit stepping towards him. "Brian, my boy, what can I do you for?" An hour later, Jacob drove back to the crossroads. Brian was standing there, tall and whole, naked from the waist up. Jacob got out of the truck and walked to him.
"Well, looks like it worked out," Jacob said.
Brian flexed. He had a huge grin on his face.
"I feel great," he said, and stretched out his arms as wide as he could, relishing the feel of them.
Brian's changed. More than him having arms, there's something else here, Clyde said in Jacob's head.
"So, what did you make your deal for?"
Brian grinned.
"I'm invincible."
"Okay, but what's your deal?"
"That's it. Anything that hurts me makes me stronger."
"That's it. You sure?"
"The judge always has a twist." Jacob was skeptical.
"Nope, that's it. Said something about balance, but I was watching my arms grow just like that. It hurt something fierce, but it was so cool to watch them. Kind of missed what he was talking about, and, oh yeah, that fucking creepy dude, Mr. November? What the fuck was that? Just grinning like an idiot, talking about contracts and waving clauses and some shit. I don't know. Just some shit."
"That shit is the important part.
Fuck, Brian. Now we don't know what's going to happen. You got two new arms, and it ain't going to be for free. Believe me, it ain't going to be so easy."
Brian stomped his foot like a child denied ice cream.
"Well, fuck, I don't know, do I?" Brian said. "Come on, let's get back to the farm. Ma's going to be freaking. I gotta explain."
"Now that's not going to be pretty."
Jacob agreed, and they walked back to Clyde.
"What are you going to tell your folks?" Jacob asked.
"I don't know. Not much I kin say, excepting I met with the judge. New arms is a bit hard to hide," Brian said with a wry smile.
They drove the half hour back to Brian's farm in silence, each lost in their own thoughts.
"Drop me off here. It's late. I don't want to wake them with your roaring around the yard," Brian said.
Jacob hadn't been planning any roaring around, but he didn't say anything. Just slowed Clyde, pulled to a stop on the gravel road at the end of Brian's lane.
"Night, Jacob," Brian said. "Talk to you in the morning if I'm still around."
Brian grinned, flexed his new arms, and slid out of the truck.
Jacob waited for Brian to start walking, and with a wave, turned Clyde around and headed home.
"His deal seems pretty standard. I don't feel a lot of threads around it," Clyde said.
"Threads?" Jacob asked.
"Yeah, every contract has its clauses. They show up like threads, thin colored lines wrapped around the soul, stretching out to the other plane.
They're what tie the soul to the devil."
"And mine?" Jacob asked.
"Yours is simple. But he has two threads I don't understand. I don't think I've ever seen these."
"I really don't know what they mean,"
Clyde answered as they turned into Jacob's lane and drove to the house. The house was dark, only the yard light casting solid shadows. One shadow stood and walked up to greet Jacob and Clyde.
"Hey, Doc," Jacob said, but he did not reach out to pet the massive German Shepherd. He knew better. He walked to the house and closed the screen door quietly. His mom would have woken when he drove into the yard, but there was no need to further disturb her with the screen door bang.
Early the next morning, Brian was banging on Jacob's door. Jacob's ma was up doing her morning baking. "You'd have to show up pretty damn early to catch her in bed."
"Come on in,"
she called from the kitchen. Brian walked in. The screen door gave a plaintive cry, then banged shut, ensuring Jacob would be up or at least aware Brian had arrived.
"What you baking?" Brian asked, peering over her shoulder.
"Just some fresh bread. It ain't ready."
"Another 10 minutes.
"Go get Jacob, and I'll fix you some bread."
She stopped, shock on her face that turned into horror as she realized what she was seeing.
"You dumb fuck," she screamed. "You went to see the judge."
Brian stepped back just as Jacob stumbled into the kitchen. Brian had never heard Jacob's ma raise her voice in anger, let alone swear.
"What's all a ruckus?" Jacob said.
"And I suppose you put him up to it." She turned on Jacob.
"Hell no. I tried to talk him out of it."
Jacob raised his hands as he backed up. She glared at the two cowering boys, each several heads taller than her. After a time, she shook her head. There was a resigned sadness in her eyes.
"Well, you might as well have some breakfast," she said.
Brian looked at Jacob, shrugged, and sat. Jacob pulled his t-shirt on and sat across from Brian. "I can't imagine your ma's none too happy."
"No shit," Brian said. "That's why I'm here. Been yelled at since 2 this morning.
When my pa's voice got hoarse, ma sat in. Never did get a word in edgewise." He gave Jacob a grin. Ma saw and scowled, holding the plates of bacon and eggs with toast.
"Your ma has every right to yell at you. Thought you were a mite smarter than this fool child here."
She looked at Jacob. Brian looked down at his plate as Ma put it in front of him.
"Well, seems to me there's plenty of work around here for two strong young men with too much energy," Ma said.
"Yes, ma'am," Jacob said, digging into his breakfast. "The old barn's nearly falling down on itself. Thought maybe we'd pull her down."
"You don't think it's dry enough to finish South Quarter?" Ma asked.
"After breakfast, we'll drive over and check, but I don't think so. Not much sand in that there ground," Jacob said around a mouthful of egg.
Sunday morning, Brian's ma called from the kitchen. "Brian?"
She waited.
"Brian, we're heading to church. Maybe you want to come?"
She waited.
"Brian, you hear me, boy?"
"Leave it be, ma. I ain't going to be coming to no church, and you know it,"
Brian called down from his room. His ma looked at Pa, shook her head, shrugged, and pushed Pa out the kitchen door. Brian went back to sleep. The church Brian's folks went to was over half an hour away in a tiny village of Accord. They turned right out of their drive, headed west on 78, turned north on 89, across 11, and 10 minutes further. On Sunday, the village was quiet, with no vehicles except for churchgoers. The church was built in the 40s. It was a small, white-painted wooden building, pretty and well-kept. It had a tiny steeple. Its bell rang out as Brian's folks pulled up and parked. Service was an hour. The minister rambled on about being vigilant about the devil. It seemed to be directed at them personally, as if the minister knew what Brian had done. Afterward, Brian's folks shook hands with the minister and walked down the steps. They looked at each other when they got in their car. A plan. They needed a plan to save their son. They sat talking quietly, trying to figure out if now was the time to talk to the minister, maybe get his help. He was very young and very inexperienced, and he was new to Accord. He still didn't know much about the judge and his hold on the area. He would be of little use. They would need to find another way. That decided, they drove out of the parking lot and headed home, south on 89, out of the village, and stopped at Highway 11. It was just past noon on a bright, beautiful Sunday. Pa checked west, checked east, then he pulled out. Ma was feeling hopeful they could find a way to save their son now that they had decided to. She opened her mouth to make a comment on the day. Stanley Robertson was in his early 70s, still sharp as a tack, but his eyes were going, and the beer between his legs wasn't his first. When Brian's pa pulled out in front of him, he reacted as best he could. Stanley was driving his old Massey Ferguson truck loaded with some 80 bales of hay. He yanked the truck hard to his right, too late. His truck began to roll over, spilling the bales of hay across the pavement and clipped the back of Brian's folks' car, sending it into a spin. The car spun in a broad, slow arc into the path of the oncoming semi. The tractor trailer with its glittering tank on its back rammed into them from behind. It was speeding. The much heavier semi shoved the car forward. The front of the car was flung upward into the air. At this point, Brian's folks were still alive and were shoved violently into their seats. The car rolled upside down over the trunk's massive tank of gas. It ignited. The explosion was felt several miles away, and the sound carried much farther. The fire lasted for hours and melted the pavement below the tangled metal. It looked like a scene from hell. If Brian had been awake and in the yard, he might have been able to hear the accident. He definitely would have been able to see the cloud of black smoke that roiled into the sky. I hope you enjoyed the conclusion of Haymaker. Tune in next week for Radio SHP 666, Backroad Radio, the voice of Hard Place. Music by Noah Zachron. Production copyright by R.A. Jacobson 2021. If you would like to support Stories from a Hard Place, please go to patreon.com/hardplace. If you'd like a book version, either ebook or print, you can find it on Amazon. You can find links to all these and much more at Dead Cat Studio. That's deadcatstud.io. Thanks for listening. Keep the shining side up.